Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
I'm Kim Grinnell of Dogman.com with Chris Fetter, Scott Eklund. It is, what are we, week nine?
Yep.
Week nine?
Well, it's week 10.
With a bye week. Friday night kickoff is at 7:30?
Yep.
Yes. 7:30.
ESPN. ESPN 2.
The deuce.
Yeah, against Oregon State, which is, can you guys remember when, if Washington's ever played a team after a bye week where the opposition has also had a bye week?
Oh.
Not at the top of my
head.
There's
no way. I'd need to go to some serious.
But honestly, with both teams playing on a Friday night, I think this is the way you do it. If you're going to play on a Friday night, you have both teams coming off of a bye.
Oh, for sure. In terms of the scheduling, no fan of either team should have a problem with this.
Yeah.
But then that also gives them an extra day to prepare for Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they lose a day in travel heading down to Oregon as well.
No, a full day? It's 2 hours.
Do they bus down there? Or do they?
Typically they have in the past. I don't know if they will now.
Yeah.
I mean, what's interesting is I think even though Eugene would have like a bigger airport than like Corvallis or whatever, I think I remember in the past that they would, if they took the plane, they would actually charter into like Corvallis, even though they were staying even in Eugene. So don't ask me why.
Because they just don't want to give the business to Eugene.
Why then? Why would they be staying in Eugene then? Because it's always been the Valley River Inn is where they've always stayed.
Would you stay in Eugene if you didn't have to?
I would always stay in Salem because for practical terms, it's much easier to be much closer to home, even if it's only like an hour. It makes a difference.
We'll have to ask you know, if they're going to bus or drive down, and we'll get an answer to that. But
on Monday.
Well, they don't even know what time the game's being played yet, and we won't know that until probably Saturday or Sunday. So,
yeah. Thanks, you guys.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, my guess is if Washington wins, it's probably a big noon game on
Fox. I think according to John Wilner, it's either going to be like between 4:30 or night, 7:30.
Okay. That's what it sounds like.
So I think everyone is probably going to be praying for a mid-afternoon game.
I certainly will be.
But I'll tell you what, the last time they had a mid-afternoon game, if I remember correctly, wasn't it the last time they played down there?
Was it 2018?
And as much as it sucked having to try to cover that game, you know, the way they lost in overtime and all that, the sunset,
when you
see it over Autzen Stadium, it was really, really nice.
It was 2018.
Yeah, it was really nice to watch. So, I mean, yes, I know Washington fans. See Fetters at Dogman.com. You can send all your hate mail to me. But I'm telling you, that sunset that particular day was memorable because I'm talking about it now.
Softy's beside himself because probably going to be a late start down in Eugene. And then the Seahawks play at 6 o'clock in the morning against Tampa Bay. I think that game is in Germany the next day. So.
Was it Hamburg? No, maybe Amber. I can't remember.
Yeah, I can't remember. But we had a chance to talk to Coach DeBoer on Monday. Just nothing really seemed to jump out. He talked about some of the younger guys, you know, being able to get in the mix with the extra reps. But nothing really jumped out from what he said on Monday.
The biggest thing that jumped out to me was what he started it off with was that that was the most players they'd had on the field since they got here.
They're also planning to hopefully have the secondary lineup that they had in game one.
For the second game in a row.
So they've gone literally from week one till now, which we talked about week 10, they've had 8 different secondary lineups. Mm-hmm. So to be able to have that, think about all the turmoil that they've had to go through with the defensive backs, and obviously they've really suffered as a result of that. But to talk about it in those terms, it really kind of puts it in stark understanding of what exactly they've had to go through.
Did Perryman actually get hurt in the Kent State game?
Yes, that's
so he didn't play the full game.
No, he didn't. Because he got run around, and then he actually got hurt going towards the Kent State sideline. So that's where he got pulled out.
So the last week at Cal was the first time since the opening game that they had all those guys on the field at the same time.
Yep.
Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, and I'm not sure, you know, we can get into it a little bit later, but, you know, just Oregon State looks like they're going to run the ball. So I think it's more important to have those defensive linemen healthy than it is those DBs.
Oh, well, yeah, but the DBs got to get in their run fits, too. I mean, having Asa Turner be able to come in, be in there and doing his thing. Alex Cook he's okay in run fits. I don't think he's that great, but he is who they have. And, you know, you've got to be on your P's and Q's when it comes to those run fits, because Oregon State will gash you.
Well, speaking of the defensive line, we didn't ask the coaches this week about Kualpehopa. We don't know what his status is, assuming he's still week to week for violation of team rules. Well, obviously, that's one thing we're going to have to check out on Friday night when we see the team hit the field is 98 out there?
Yeah.
And if 98 is back out there and he's playing – that could be a real big bonus.
I don't remember seeing him, you know, on Wednesday when we were walking off the field. When they were walking off the field, I don't remember seeing him. But that doesn't mean he's not going to be available. I didn't see him.
I mean, I'm going to be surprised if we see him the rest of the year.
I am too. I will too.
Yeah. So
the rest of the year. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, right. You know, it's just he's got to.
We know what it is. There's just a lot that needs to happen.
Yeah. So. I mean, it's team business, and it's not. Yep. Up to us to put that out, you know. So if it was your kid, you know, just we'd respect that as well. So if the coaches want to say what it is, fine. Until then, you know, we'll figure it out. But yesterday we had a chance to talk to some of the players as well. Had a chance to talk to Michael Penix, which was interesting because he's from Miami and then in Indiana. And you would expect him to have some rainy games back in Miami, but said he really didn't, except one game that was in a monsoon. And he says, yeah, I think I threw for 400 yards anyways. Mm-hmm.
Well, remember, just to make sure, he's from Tampa, not from Miami. Excuse me. So I don't know what the monsoon situation is in the middle of the state. Or that's not, it's I guess on the west coast, west side of the state, as opposed to the east side of the state. I don't know if they're shielded more because of that stuff. Or maybe the monsoons come from the Gulf of Mexico instead of the Atlantic Ocean. Mm-hmm. I have no idea.
But he also talked about hitting you.
Yeah, he's in the
well,
ball.
That's the thing, though. I mean, think about it. Everyone talks about the passing game when they think about rain. It's just ball security, guys.
Yeah.
A fumble can happen with a running back just as well as it can happen with a receiver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or a quarterback.
But so, I think a lot of it is going to depend on can he throw the ball, though, like you want him to throw the ball. And,
you know, and if it's like it was this week, where it's they did experience some rain in practice, so people can stop freaking out about that.
According to Ryan Grubb, he goes, every day I've been driving into practice thinking, okay, today's the day we get a rain practice. Didn't he say this?
Yeah.
And then he goes, and then I get here and it's ending at 8 o'clock.
There's no question that it's been very spotty.
Yeah.
Like when I was driving in from Ballard, it was really raining hard. And by the time I got to Montlake, it wasn't raining at all. Yeah. So I assumed that they got some rain because it was clearly wet on the on the pavement. But again, the way the rain goes around here this time of year, very rarely do we get like heavy rain for a really long period of time.
It's usually November.
That's usually a little bit later. Now we're kind of getting into the kind of half.
We're being weathered here.
Mother Nature doesn't know if we're fully out of the fall or if we're really starting to get into the muck.
Also had a chance to talk to Wayne Talapapa, you know, and he struggled in the first half against Cal with some drops, which is really not like him. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Michael had also talked about when he was back at Indiana that they had a game against Virginia, and both him and Mike, him and Wayne, didn't play much. He said, but it was just so cold. And when I was talking to Wayne about that, asked him if he remembered that game, And he said he did, and he said how cold it was. And I said, you remember who won? And Michael Penix ran by and started laughing. He goes, we won!
Yeah.
So it was kind of funny. Mm-hmm. So they had actually played against each other.
That's interesting, though, because you think of it, Indiana and Virginia?
Yeah.
Was that a bowl game?
It was at Indiana.
Because if it was at Indiana, was it September? Why would it have been that cold in September?
You never know. You can get
Or cold. Maybe even early October,
you
I suppose.
You could get an early... Early cold thing.
I suppose.
Yeah, and the other interesting guy I talked to is Mish Powell, and I think getting Mish back is huge because he's a big physical corner, and I think he's really going to help this week.
Yeah, definitely on the shorter passing game. I mean, he's really good at sniffing out those short screen passes and taking the right angle so that it's tough to block him, and he made a couple plays on Cal guys last week.
Yeah, and you had a chance to
talk. I spoke to Rome a little bit. I spoke to Asa Turner a little bit. Some of it was about NIL, which I think, you know, Rome's basically like, I think he's of the opinion that it's like, if I take care of what I'm supposed to take care of, the rest of that stuff will kind of come. And they have a lot of support in this area, whether it's from Boundless Futures or Montlake Futures. They're getting a lot of support off the field for that stuff. So I got the sense that if he is kind of the example of what you want to use for the Washington football team in terms of NIL, they seem pretty pleased with how things are going with that. Because we were talking about it, one of the things you talked to Mike about, Penix, was the Top Golf. Yeah. They had a little outing with Top Golf during the bye week, and it sounded like that thing went off really, really well.
Yeah, if you ever want to see something funny, football players with golf clubs in their hand, unless they're a quarterback, usually doesn't work out well.
Well, now, we can go all the way back in the past when there have been some outings, whether it was either fundraisers for the Tyee or someone when they were playing at Washington National, and then we'd even have some media events out there sometimes. And I remember when they were having tea prizes and stuff, and they would have some of the athletes out there, and this was the time when Nate Robinson was one of the guys. And so we gave Nate a club to try to swing, and I think either he topped it or missed it completely. But you would think that one of the supreme athletes to ever come out of Washington, two-sport guy, and the first time we ever saw him try to swing a club, it was like he had never seen it. He didn't know anything about it.
Golf is not a sport for – I don't want to take away from golfers who are good athletes.
Well, I'm just talking about basic coordination.
Athleticism has nothing to do with being able to hit a
golf ball.
But
you think guys that are dual sport in college at that level, in basketball and football, the hand-eye thing would be there, right?
If you've never done it, though, you got to grip it weird. I remember the first time I had to grip it, I was like, why am I holding it like this?
You ever notice it's always the quarterbacks that are the good golfers?
Oh, absolutely. It's a hand-eye coordination.
Yeah. Well,
and they also have some of the time
Jake
to play.
Wasn't Jake Haner like a one handicap or something like that?
Yeah, they have a lot of time to play. Yeah.
I think it's the analytical way that quarterbacks think.
Well, Jake Haner's dad, if I remember correctly, was the club pro. Like, he was a golf pro.
I just remember his mom being
California.
A news anchor in the Bay Area.
Well, Ray Sporter said, he shot 72 when he was 12 years old at St. Andrews.
Yeah.
You know?
No. I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, there's... You know, some of it is socioeconomic. We don't need to go into that, but there are reasons why. But I just thought it was funny because you can take some of the world's best athletes, hand-eye coordination, the whole bit, and put a golf club in their hand and a ball on a tee, and if you want to make them look foolish, it's not hard.
Asa, you had a chance to talk to Asa. Anything of interest from Asa?
Just getting back and how he feels like he's back to 100% health, which was huge for him. He said the bye week came at a perfect time, not just for him, but he feels for the entire secondary because he's right in the middle of all that secondary stuff with all those guys kind of coming and going and trying to make a cohesive unit with that group has been very, very difficult. But he feels like that bye week came at the perfect time because not only were they getting Mish back, and Mish got a chance to play against Cal, so that was a good kind of ramp for him to go into the bye week and really get 100% healthy. But now maybe you get a guy like Julius Irvin back, who was so huge for them in the middle, like games 2, 3, 4, 5. He was really huge for them, and now he needs to come back and show that he's ready to go and healthy. But it was also important to get the younger guys like Javion Green, guys like Tristan Dunn, guys getting those guys ready to go because they're going to be really important for the end of this season stretch. I mean, a guy like Dunn, I mean, he's probably right on the edge of the games played. in terms of whether or not he's going to be able to redshirt, because Javion Green's not going to redshirt.
Yeah, the only two who've burned their redshirts so far, at least the article that I did during the bye week,
right,
was Javion Green and Javon Parker.
Right.
Everybody else still has at least one game left that they can play.
See, I thought DeBoer said this week that Parker was right on the edge.
He did, but it's actually five. He has played in five games.
Okay.
At least according to what
the
participation charts.
And Garen Patchett's position changed to tight end.
Yeah, I spoke to Garen quite a bit, and Dan Raley and I were talking to him about that. And he's kind of the opinion of a lot of those guys. It's like, whatever you want me to play, Coach, I'll do it. And
I just want to get on the field.
And not to jump too far ahead, because I had a really long talk with Coach Schmidt this week, but I asked him special teams, and I said, why is a guy like Garen Patchett such a good fit for you guys in the shield? And he goes, it's the way his brain works. He goes, we just love how he operates. And the other thing is that it's just like with Mateo Mele and just like with Nate Kalepo on the offense. They want to get those guys in the game somehow, some way. They've worked hard enough to do it. They want to get reps. They want to keep developing those guys. And so if they can get them in for a handful of plays every game, it keeps them motivated. It keeps them engaged. And the more guys that are engaged and motivated in the locker room, it really pays dividends.
And that's why it kind of surprises me when they had Jeremiah Martin line up on the offensive side of the ball, when they could put a guy like Garen Patchett and Mateo Mele or even a Nate Kalepo or Bulow, you know, with that extra offensive lineman, and why they would bring a guy like Jeremiah Martin over instead.
I don't have an answer for you. I was surprised when we saw Martin come in that one time. So,
well, what's interesting, Kim, is if you look at the other side, if you look at the team they're playing against on Friday, Oregon State, they have arguably the best two-way guy in the entire country in Jack Coletto. And I asked Eric Schmidt about this specifically because Jack Coletto has such a unique skill set. I mean, he's a 250-pound guy, but he played quarterback in high school. They've got other quarterbacks, too, that you've got to look out for, not just at the quarterback position. They have a lot of versatility in that backfield. But when you bring a guy like Coletto in on short yardage and goal line and stuff like that, everyone knows what's coming and you can't stop it. Yeah. You just can't stop it. And so I asked him about that. But going back to a guy like Patchett, not only talking about that versatility and keeping him engaged and keeping him motivated, because he was in on it. He was 100%. He's like, I'll do whatever I need to do. If it gets me on the field, I'm going to play it. And he talked about whether it's tight end, whatever. I think they just want the versatility. When you talk about a guy like Jeremiah Martin trying to play it, a guy like Patchett trying to play it, I think they just want to keep these guys engaged and motivated and feeling like there are some unique skill sets out here with some of their bigger guys that they can really use to try to help them. One thing I will add, too, before we go to the coaches, just talking to Patchett a little bit more. Obviously, I wanted to ask him about his connection with his brother, with Landon, who is he will sign here next month, I would imagine. I don't see any reason why he wouldn't sign mid-year. Is that right, Scott?
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's always a possibility anymore, but no, everything that I'm aware of, no.
Yeah, so we talked to him a little bit about that, and I don't know if people understood this, but they actually played a year together in football at Ferndale, and so to get back and play with him again, he goes, you know, there's just not a lot of brothers that get an opportunity to do this at this level. So he goes, I'm just going to embrace it and cherish it and go with it as far as we can because it's such a unique idea.
The one benefit with Garen Patchett, because he's 3 years older than Landon.
Yeah, but he gets that 2020 season,
he gets the
right?
2020 season back, so he actually has three full seasons that he can play with him.
Yeah, which is great.
You had a long, I don't know if you had a lunch date or just a conversation with Eric Schmidt. You had him forever.
I don't know. It must have been my deodorant or something because everyone was staying away. I talked to Coach Schmidt for about 15 minutes this week, and it was a great conversation. And to be honest with you, I really wanted to talk to him as much about special teams as it was the edge guys, because the edge guys have been the most consistent unit. There's still some things, obviously, they need to clean up. We talked a little bit about, you know, what they need to do in the flats in terms of making sure that they keep progressing. And those whether it's the screen game or some of these passes to the flat where the edge guys need to be responsible to really put those things down quickly, because sometimes in the past they've turned those 2 and 3 yard gains into like 20 yard gains because they haven't been able to tackle, get guys on the ground. He goes, they're getting better at that, but they need to keep improving. The one thing I really wanted to ask him on special teams was not just about Patchett, but also the development of the return guys, because I don't know if people have understood this or seen it, watch it evolve, but Giles Jackson was like the kick returner and the punt returner, basically like the first half of the year. These last three or four games, it's been more like Cameron Davis back there. You know, they've tried to use other guys, and then in the punt return game, you've had J-Mac, you've also had Junior Alexander taking some punts, and I just asked him. I said, has the evolution of this thing kind of changed back to the idea of using starters? Because we know how much they want to use starters as cover guys, as return, like Wayne Talapapa, great example. Carson Brunner, if he's ever started, he's been a big time guy. They've used a ton of their defensive backs. Dominique Campton has been a guy over the years. It's been a big time player for them in special teams. I said, I understand that in terms of guys in the cover and blocking game, but what about as returners? And he goes, you know, we're using kind of the running back by committee approach anyway. So to get a guy like Cam Davis out there who's really close, they feel he's close to breaking one. I don't know if that means to the house or just maybe a 30 or 40 yarder. But anyways, they haven't broken one in a long time. Not since, like, what, John Ross?
John Ross, probably.
They need
and
to get
Dante
some production.
And Pettis, obviously. And
he's such a unicorn when it comes to those things. But we talked a little bit about that, and he just said, hey, those guys want to play the position because we're going running back by committee. We don't feel like we're exploiting it if Cam Davis is returning some kicks because he's not carrying the ball 30 times a game. He's not doing it like Miles Gaskin or Savon Ahmed or one of those types of guys. So that's kind of been their thinking on the return game.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina, yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
Coach Grubb had his guys out with a bucket full of water, dipping balls in it before they threw it. And it's not so much about the balls being wet. Let me phrase it that way. It's more about, because they could dry those off. They could dry those off, but he says it's more about dipping their hands in the water and getting their hands wet and getting used to it.
Yeah, for Penix, it's just going to be, I've said it on the board several times. I don't think the rain is going to be the issue. It's going to be wind. And that's going to be the biggest thing. Aside from obviously
in terms of the passing game, 100%.
I mean, aside from the pass rush and things like that, if you're just talking about the elements, the rain isn't going to cause any problems for the Washington passing game. It's going to be the wind and how they handle it.
But you remember, you know, Sark told us when he was recruiting quarterbacks, he was looking for a guy who could really spin the ball because it makes a difference in Husky Stadium.
Yeah, because of the wind. That's why it's wind. It has nothing to do with the rain. It's all wind. And you need guys with tight spirals. Michael Penix throws a tight spiral, so that's a good thing.
And I'm also assuming at 6'3", almost 220, he's got – I haven't really noticed. He probably has pretty big hands.
Everybody says his hands are ginormous.
Yeah, and so when it comes to that, holding on to the ball with grip, I mean, that's going to be a big part of it too. Because, you know, I know some of those other guys, whether it was a Hainer, Dylan Morris is – I don't know if
his Dylan Morris's hands aren't that big, he can – throw it really well.
Oh, no, he can spin it. There's no question about that.
He said Michael's hands are 10-plus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, who are some of the quarterbacks at Washington who threw floaters? Did Keith Price kind of throw a floater?
Nick Montana? No, Keith Price didn't have a cannon, but he could throw it. He could throw it. Huh. Yeah.
my candidate for floater?
Nick Montana?
Casey Paws.
Yeah, Casey Paws.
Casey Paws was the ultimate floater.
Yeah. I don't remember who was the one that took Ronnie Fouch.
Yeah.
I don't think he had the strongest arm in the world.
No, he didn't have
the,
not compared to Jake Locker.
Who was the one who would throw it and the ball seemed to go with the nose down all the time?
Cody Pickett. Did that?
He did a lot. It was Keith Price. That was one that
The nose seemed to be down on the ball all the
time. No, Siler Miles.
It was Siler.
I know Cody Pickett used to do that too, deliberately.
Yeah. So, anyways, but interesting talking to Coach grub about that and mm-hmm. just, you know, listen to it. He talks about Michael's hand and his finger placement that allows him to spin the ball a little bit more. So interesting talking to him. And then I tried to talk to Coach Brechter Field. He doesn't like to talk much.
Nope. He's real matter of fact with you. He doesn't really put up with a lot. You better ask good questions.
Yeah.
He honestly reminds me of interviewing, what's his face, Gilbertson. If you didn't ask Gilbertson a good question, yeah. Oh. If you didn't ask him a good question, okay. he wouldn't give you anything. He'd just be like, what?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, Coach Brechter Field facing his alma mater, and he's done that before when he was at UCLA. He played with Jonathan Smith, but every time I asked him a question, it was like, can I go now?
Yeah.
You know, he's just a no nonsense defensive lineman. So,
yeah.
You know, he doesn't want to talk to us.
Nope.
Yeah. But at the same time, this is the week where we would want to talk to him because of his connection with Oregon State, obviously his alma mater, if there's a connection with Jonathan Smith, mm-hmm. those types of things.
Yeah, he just seemed one of those. It's game week. I'm irritable. What do you want? You know, which is fine. Which is fine. He's not rude mm-hmm. like some of the guys that we've had in the past. Who'd you talk to yesterday?
I talked to Coach Morrell. Asked him about how the practices have come along, and he said, "Yeah, the guys they've had a really good couple days of practices so far. He's liked the communication between in the secondary. Thinks that thinks it's not going to be an easy task by any stretch of the imagination because Oregon State is one of those few teams who run the ball physically, but can also push it down the field a little bit because of the talent they have at wide receiver." And he said they can hit you at all levels, especially with the way they use their tight ends. Oregon's another one who uses their tight ends unbelievably. And Oregon State and Oregon are the two that really use their tight ends quite a bit. And Utah use their tight ends quite a bit. And he said that this team, we're going to have to really be on our coverages, know exactly what we're doing, read formations correctly, because if we don't, we're going to get carved up.
Which is interesting because, you know, I mean, they're about a 60-40 run team, mm-hmm. whereas Washington's about a 60-40 pass team.
Mm-hmm.
So you would think Washington sometimes would have an edge using some tight ends and whatnot, but that's a huge supplement of their game, and I think it's going to be really, really interesting to see if Musgrave, for instance, is he going to play? I
mean, no.
I don't know. It doesn't
Not
sound like
heard.
It,
yeah.
But that's such a huge loss for them. But you look at the kid from Prep, Velly.
Yeah.
He's starting to really emerge, and he's a true freshman, right?
Yep, true freshman.
So, you know, they've got some weapons and some guys that probably were a little underlooked, and I wonder if Velly had been eligible for like 2023 class, for instance, whether or not Washington would have been all over him compared to the timing of a year ago.
I know that DeBoer and Sheridan went to Seattle Prep when they first got here before, because
right.
I don't think he signed until
right.
February.
But it was so late.
It was so late in the process that they got Sheridan hired that DeBoer, and so when they went to see him, they had told him that they liked him and wanted to see if he was, because I think by then he had already committed to Oregon State.
Yeah.
And so they asked him, and he just said, no, I'm set on Oregon State.
But it also underscores now why you see them going after a guy like Dorian Thomas, who's a kid who's a tight end committed to Oregon State.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're trying to get in on those guys again. But,
well, there's also Jensen, who's committed to Oregon State, too.
Yep.
Jerry Jensen's son.
Yep.
I forget. Is it Jack Jensen,
Cooper?
I think? Cooper Jensen? Yeah, it might be Cooper Jensen. But he's another one that they're looking at. They want to get a tight end in this class.
There's no doubt, though, that Smith and those coaches at Oregon State have done a very good job of recruiting this area mm-hmm. in the vacuum between Lake and DeBoer. They were probably as good at taking advantage of that as anybody not named Ohio State.
And I know that the Oregon State coaches are really worried about Jensen.
Yeah.
I know that they're hanging on for dear life with that kid. So if Washington offers that kid, so that'll be interesting to see what happens.
Well, I'd be shocked if he didn't take it if that was the case.
Yeah, so we'll see if that offer comes through. Anything else from football? I want to touch bases on basketball.
No, just that I think it's been a pretty typical week, even though it's a short week for football. The media stuff doesn't really change for us, and so it's been a pretty solid week, a lot of interviews. Again, like I said, a really long conversation with Eric Schmidt, and I'll post a lot of those quotes here either later this afternoon or tomorrow morning. But, just a lot of good conversations, and I get the sense that this bye week just came at a really, really good time for them, not just because they needed it, but also simply because of the opponents that they're having to face going forward. They can really just go, okay, we've got four guys. We've got a whole month of November. We just got to plow through this and really finish strong.
Well, when the weather changes like this and it starts getting cold, because it just seemed like a switch was flipped. You start getting into the dog days, and it's good to have a little bit of time off. I think this timing was better because if it would have been a couple weeks ago, I just think the timing was perfectly good for them to just kind of do a deep breath and kind of a reset second half of the season and make a go of it.
Yeah, get healthy.
And winning that Cal game, you know, just sets.
Well, winning two in a row.
Yeah, just sets the tone. Basketball, Tuesday night, exhibition against Alaska Fairbanks, just not even really a fair matchup. That's why it was an exhibition game. A lot of good things to see from the basketball team. We saw them play everybody. All the scholarship players got in. We got to see some newcomers, especially I think the guy that people are kind of latched on to, and I've been talking about him for a while, Keon Menefield, the guard from Flint, Michigan. He looks like he could be something special, so something to keep an eye on. He showed up at 135 pounds, and I think five of that is hair. So he looks like that score they're looking from. Frank Kepnong, Braxton Mia, Keon Brooks looks like he's a player. He's probably going to be their leading scorer this year.
Well, I'll tell you, he has that move where he comes in from the corners and curls into the elbow and then hits, you know, just goes up for the turnaround jumpers and the elbows, and it looks like he just jumps like 12 feet. I mean, it just, he jumps out of the gym. And then you talk about Keon Menefield. You know, I just saw, it's so funny, as good as he looked offensively, he was going up for some rebounds, and he was literally going up, and his head was almost at the rim when he was making a couple of those rebound attempts. And so, you know, there's a lot of athleticism in this group, a lot of length, even though a guy like Keon is only about 6'2". You know, he's not going to be a starter, obviously, I don't think this year, unless some really weird things happen. But ultimately, you know, they played a lot of man against the Nanooks, which is one of the best nicknames ever, the Nanooks. And so they played a lot of man, and Fairbanks was down a couple players, a couple of their key starters. So that's another reason why Washington was able to win by 30-plus. But this is a team that made a deep run into the NCAA tournament. It was Division two.
Yeah.
So this is a team that had some players. Now, they did a complete turnaround. Like, they got like eight new players on their roster, something like that. So it was a new roster, and a couple of the key guys that they used this week to play against Washington were from the area, a kid from Seattle Prep and a kid from Kentwood. So there, that was interesting that they were able to get those guys, and I thought they showed some glimpses, but really when it comes down to it, Kim, when they decide to go zone, when Washington really, you know, when Hopkins, you know, hits that switch and they go zone up front with P.J. Fuller and Noah Williams, they have a chance to really be truly elite up there, because they're not of the Thibel category. They're not at that top level, but they show enough Thibel characteristics with their length and their anticipation to cause a lot of havoc and get a lot of points in transition.
And if they lose that matchup at the top of the key, they got rim protectors that can clean it up.
Yes, they do. And we haven't seen a situation yet where both Braxton and Frank play together.
I don't think you will.
It all depends. I think that's going to be another thing where if they have matchups, like if USC or UCLA, if they go big, Washington now can go big. It's all about having that position versatility and the personnel in order to do whatever they want to do, whether it's the zone or man. So I think that's really important.
Don't confuse the athleticism of this team for being soft. This is a tough physical team. They knocked two guys out of the game last night with blows to the face.
Well, yeah, chipped one guy's tooth, which was okay. But they were diving. And to me, toughness is more like what P.J. Fuller was doing, going diving for loose balls, doing that thing, really contesting those 50-50 possessions is huge.
P.J. looked like Eddie when somebody yelled fumble.
Yeah, but like, yeah, knocking guys down, whatever. Anybody can do that. But actually hounding a guy and getting the ball back and creating a sudden change play where your guys can get money in transition – that's toughness to me. And these guys showed it. And PJ really, I think Mike Hopkins was right when he talked about it. PJ really started that with his toughness. And then we know what kind of toughness that Noah Williams has when he really wants to lock down a guy. He can absolutely lock down a guy.
I'm right under the basket, you know, and it's been a while since I've heard a guy that can talk trash like Noah Williams. And it's just, I mean, it's nonstop. And the stuff that comes out of his mouth is just, God, I'd love to get him mic'd up for a game. He's in guys' ears, in their face. And, you know, the two guys that got, you know, bloodied up from going amongst the oak trees down below, and he was laughing at him. And he was talking on the foul stripe, and it's fun. Like Hopkins says, he hated playing against him, but I'm glad he's on our team, is what Mike Hopkins says. He's a good guy to have.
Well, I don't think Noah stops trash talking. He was trash talking in the post game, so it doesn't stop. And that's, I guess that's probably part of the point. If you can back it up, and like I told you off the air here, if he can come up, I don't care if he scores a point. And I'm not even sure if Hopkins cares if he scores a point. If he could come up with 10 assists and 6 steals every game, that's money in the bank, and he will take that every single time, because you're asking him to be the point guard, something he hasn't done in a little while, but he did it at the high school level, won a state championship at the high school level doing that. If he can facilitate the offense, facilitate some transition, and create own opportunities for himself by getting to the hole, by anticipating passes and going on the fast break – If you're Mike Hopkins, you're like, yeah, all day. I'll take that all day.
You talk about Noah and PJ diving for balls. Big Frank's diving in the stands after stuff.
Yeah, that wasn't smart. But yeah,
he only knows one way.
Yeah, but exactly, that he knows 100%. That's the way he's going to go. I think the most impressive thing to me about both Brax and Frank was their energy, but also the way they ran the floor. It's been a while since I've seen bigs. I mean, like, legit bigs. I'm not talking about Langston, Wilson-type bigs, because I love Langston. Don't get me wrong. Langston has a definite role on this team, and I think he could be a difference maker. But he is not a big in the sense of these guys. And these guys were running the lanes as good as Langston was, and that's impressive.
Wrap it up, Scott Eklund.
Weird to be back after kind of a weird week off where we just got the coaches on Monday. And not even all the coaches, just the two coordinators and Coach DeBoer.
But yeah, we were still able to talk to him later in the week.
I know.
I don't understand that.
Yeah. So we get back into the flow this week. Looking forward to the game on Friday night. I'm glad I'm going to be up in the press box, because it doesn't sound like it's going to be very fun down on the sidelines on Friday night. But yeah, Washington really needs to get this win. I think it would arguably be their best win of the season. I think Michigan State, even though they're 3-5 now, I think the win over Michigan State definitely gave this program some momentum in the right direction. But Oregon State would be the best win they've had so far this season, in my opinion.
Wrap it up, Chris Setters.
Yeah, and to go off that, I would say that I noticed that all three of the non-conference opponents are 3-5 currently through 8 games. And it was brought to my attention that every team that Washington's played outside of UCLA is 3-5. So that tells me that Washington's got a lot of uphill climbing to do these last 4 games. Colorado, notwithstanding. But when you look at Oregon State, you look at Oregon, you look at Washington State, those are going to be teams that they all are going to have to come
wins.
To play.
All tough games.
And again, talking to Coach Schmidt, we were talking about how, you know, the defensive, especially that position group and that defensive line, has to take what they've done in terms of sacks, tackles for loss, all that upfield pressure, and all that aggressiveness. They've got to turn those into turnovers, into sudden change plays. Because we're talking about a team that's top 15 in the country, guys, in sacks, total sacks. They have 2 fumbles in 8 games. That just doesn't compute. I mean, you'd almost have to work at not being able to do that. To be able to make it work. And so he said that's absolutely a focus that they've worked on. And you know, when on paper two teams are as evenly matched as they are, like Oregon State and Washington Friday night, those are the kind of plays that spell the difference between wins and losses. And so it was good to talk to the players and coaches this week about those types of things, because I think they really understand the gravity of what it's going to be like going up against a team that is legitimately as good as they are, and maybe even better, because they're ranked. And in first, I think they're ranked in the AP Top 25 for the first time since 2013. So think about what this means for Oregon State, too. Mm-hmm.
Friday night kickoff at 7:30. The goal for all of us is to be out of the stadium by 2 o'clock.
Midnight.
Yeah.
That's the goal. Midnight is the goal. 1 o'clock is acceptable.
Yeah. Game's going to finish like around 11.
No. I have a feeling that the refs will push it all the way till midnight. Yeah.
So, ESPN2.
Yeah.
ESPN2.
Commercials. Yeah. We're not getting them for a while. And then also.
Cupcakes. You got to have room for the cupcakes.
Yeah. Also on Monday night basketball game, season opener. It's not an exhibition game against Weber State. And 8 o'clock for that on Monday. So, we'll be all over it. And then just also don't forget. Fall back. Clocks get set back an hour on Sunday, so Scott gets to sleep an extra hour. I'll take the no on that. So
Can I take your hour? You don't want it?
This is the week that I wish the Saturday game that it was actually a Saturday game. So. Okay.
So we'll wrap it up. And for all of us at Dogman.com, I'm Kim Grenolds along with Chris Fetters and Scott Eklund. Go Dogs.
Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What if it was your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.